Toward the end of his life, the Buddha gave a Dharma talk that he repeated many times. And it started with the phrase, "Concentration nurtured by virtue is of great fruit, great benefit." Notice what he's saying there. He's not saying that you can't get into concentration without virtue. Although many people have misinterpreted his words in a dangerous way as well. I've known some monks who had strong powers of concentration, and they started getting sloppy in their precepts, and it didn't have any effect on their concentration. And so they figured, well, those precepts must not matter. But as soon as you start thinking that way, you justify to yourself unskillful behavior. And that way you're lying to yourself. And the concentration that's based on lying to yourself is not of great fruit and great benefit. The great fruit and benefit of concentration, of course, is discernment. And from discernment there's release. But without the virtue, the concentration, no matter how strong it may be, is not going to lead to discernment, because it's built on dishonesty. And discernment is about being honest and truthful with yourself. So if you want concentration that's safe, it has to be based on the precepts. There are five altogether: no killing, no stealing, no illicit sex, no lying, no taking of intoxicants. In each of those cases, it's a promise you make to yourself. And you want to make it absolute. Under no circumstances are you going to kill any living being. Under no circumstances are you going to steal anything from anyone. No illicit sex at all, no lying at all, not even white lies. No intoxicants. That's it. And for the precept to have power that really does nurture fruitful concentration, you have to make it a consistent, steady promise to yourself, one that you really do follow through with. Because in doing that, you develop lots of good qualities that are conducive toward right concentration. The first, of course, is simply the lack of remorse. You haven't harmed anybody in your actions, with your words. And when you reflect on that, it's easier for the mind to settle down. And to remember a precept and to be alert to your actions to make sure that you don't break it develops your powers of mindfulness and alertness, which of course transfer over into the concentration. And on top of that, there's the principle of harmlessness. You notice in the factors for the Eightfold Path that we chanted just now, from right view comes right resolve. And part of right resolve is the resolve to have no ill will and to be harmless. That's a factor of wisdom right there. And so if you want your actions to be in line with wisdom, they have to be harmless as well. Because when we're developing both concentration and discernment, it's a matter of seeing how the mind creates unnecessary problems for itself, harm on a very subtle level. So subtle that when you first encounter these states of concentration, you don't see that there's any disturbance in the mind at all. But if you learn to be alert to how your actions can create harm for yourself or for other people, then you're in a better position to see the same principle at work in your mind. The Buddha talks about developing the mind and the quality of emptiness. What it means is as the mind begins to settle down, you see that it is empty of the disturbances that it used to take for granted. For instance, you get out into the wilderness. You sit there and just remind yourself, here I am in the wilderness. And the issues of home and the issues of all the people at home suddenly seem far away. They no longer weigh on the mind. You've probably had that experience. You go to the Grand Canyon or something else that's really impressive, and all of a sudden all your issues of your daily life seem so small in comparison to the grandeur of the wilderness. Well, you want to develop that same attitude as you settle down. And it's a lot easier for the mind to settle down if you haven't been engaged in harming other people, because that harm will start nagging at you. And if you try to deny it, again, you're lying to yourself. So either the nagging sense of remorse or else the lying of the denial will block your ability to get settled down in a way where you can really see things clearly. But even if your engagement with other people has been virtuous, realize that getting away from people takes a huge load off the mind. You don't have to worry about their issues. You're just there in the wilderness. Of course, thinking about wilderness, you might think about all the animals and other things that can happen there. You go up to the north rim of the Grand Canyon, you're way away from anyone else. If anything happened to you, you're in a position of danger. So even there, the thought of wilderness can weigh on the mind to some extent. That's what the Buddha recommends, that you go on to thinking about the elements of the body. He recommends earth in that particular sutta, but you can use the breath as an alternative. You're just here with breath. You can think of breath permeating throughout the body. The whole body is breathing down through every little cell, down through every little nerve and blood vessel in the body. And that's a much less disturbed state of mind than even the thought of wilderness. So in this way, a lot of the meditation is learning how to be sensitive to slight disturbances in the mind. And you can take that as the suffering and the Four Noble Truths if you want to analyze it. This is one of the teachings that Ajahn Sawat would give. He said, you're trying to get the mind still. Any disturbance in the stillness, you can say, okay, this is suffering. When the Buddha's talking about stress and suffering, it's just little things like this, in addition to the more blatant ones. Because it's the little things like this, if we can cause ourselves this kind of burden, it's very easy to get involved in other burdens as well. This is your test case for how the mind adds an element of stress to the present moment that doesn't have to be there. So when the mind is attuned through virtue to be sensitive to harm, sensitive to disturbance, then the concentration that's built on that virtue will be much more likely to develop the discernments needed, that's needed, to start stripping away all the mind's bad habits, the subtle bad habits inside. And if you can't take care of the big bad habits, there's no way the subtle ones are going to be resolved. So if you want your concentration to be solid, it's got to be based on virtue. Years back when Ajahn Sawat was teaching in Massachusetts, at the end of the retreat, one of the questions was, how do we go about maintaining meditation in our daily life? And Ajahn Sawat's response was in the five precepts. And the person who had organized the retreat was upset because he thought Ajahn Sawat was saying that lay people can't manage meditation in daily life, so they should just content themselves with the miserable little five precepts. But that's not what he was saying at all. It's through observing the precepts that you create the container for your practice. And when the container is good, okay, then you can maintain your concentration. If there are holes in your container, the concentration is going to leak out. In Ajahn Lee's image, it leaks out your eyes and ears, nose, tongue, body. And then there's nothing left. But if you have a sense that you've got something precious here, and you want to put it in a good container to protect it, keep it, Then you work with the precepts of the five, the virtues of the five precepts, and the virtues of restraint of the senses. They go together. In fact, one of the practices that you can take on in lay life is not only the five precepts, but occasionally taking the eight. And the eight precepts are the ones that add sense restraint to the original principles of harmlessness. You check what's going out your eyes as you look. In other words, the images may be coming into your eyes, but your purpose in looking is going out your eyes, focusing on this detail, that detail, either for the purpose of greed or aversion or delusion. You've got to watch out for that. Because if you allow those things to take over your looking and listening, then they're going to take over everything else inside. You're nurturing the qualities in daily life that then you're trying to cut through when you're meditating. So of course there's going to be a conflict. If you see that you're looking out of greed, okay, try to see the unattractive side of what you're trying to use your greed to stir up. Because after all, it's not just that the fact that things are attractive that you feel greed. Often the greed is there, and then you look for something to get greedy about. The same with anger. This is why they have hate radio. The radio doesn't turn itself on. You have to turn it on to listen. You're looking for something to get angry about, so you find some commentator who's angry about something and get worked up about it. And the same with other issues, dealing with other people. Sometimes you're looking for an issue. And you start seeing things that are not there just because you want to have an issue. So if you see that happening in your mind, okay, you've got to counteract it. Either stop engaging in that particular issue or else trying to look for the good side of the things that you're making yourself angry about. So you can bring things into balance. So your wisdom and discernment are doing the looking and not your greed, aversion, and delusion. And here again, concentration that's held in a container of the restraint of the senses is much more likely to give rise to discernment, because the principles of virtue are in line with the principles of discernment. All of the jhanas make the point that virtue, concentration, discernment are really hard to distinguish from another, especially if it's right virtue, right concentration, right discernment. They come together. And they all depend on one another. It's not the case that you get your virtue straight and then you go to concentration and then you get that straight and then you go to discernment. You need your discernment to work on your virtue and concentration. You need your concentration to work on your virtue. They help one another along. And they do come together. With this principle of giving up anything that's harmful, no matter how blatant or slight. You don't say, well, I'm just going to go to the subtle things because I'm advanced. Well, if you try to let go of the subtle things but without having taken care of the blatant ones, it's not going to work. So try to stick to all three of these principles and bring them together. That's how they nurture one another and really do yield great fruit and great benefit. Lifting off the burdens of the mind.